Before Chase answered, she came bounding down the steps.
See for yourself there, Linus.
Looks fit as a fiddle.
Sarge looked at her. How you feeling?
A lot better. The medicine really helped.
Thad and I were leading the boys up the driveway when Chase noticed his handcuffed son and his friends. His gaze had almost the same chilling effect as Sarge's. After a moment, without looking away from the boys, he asked,
"What's all this about?"
"Well, Chase, my guys caught them inside one of the cabins with our gear," Sarge answered.
He replied,
"Is that so?"
"Yes, sir. When I talked to them, they acted like they had as much right to be there as we did."
Sarge turned and pointed to Chris.
"That one in particular has a pretty shitty attitude."
One of the other boys quickly spoke up.
"We told him not to, Mr. Fuller."
Chase's eyes fell on the boy, who quickly looked down.
"But you went with him anyway, didn't you?"
The boy nodded his head without looking up.
"Yes, sir."
"Linus, you can take them things off him now. They ain't going anywhere."
Sarge tossed Thad a cutter for the cuffs, and he quickly removed them.
"Chris, carry your ass out back and find me a limb. Better be a good'un, 'cause if it breaks, I'll get my own."
Chase shouted at him so loudly that it caused me to flinch.
"I didn't hear you!"
Chris looked up at his father.
"Yes, sir."
Chase looked back at Sarge.
"Kids these days, sometimes you gotta beat respect into 'em."
"Mr. Fuller, can we go?"
the second asked.
"You two stay right there. Your daddies will whoop your asses when I'm done with you."
"Chase, you ain't got to do this for us. Lord knows they deserve it, but you ain't got to do it on my account," Sarge said.
A glimmer of hope crossed the two boys' faces. Chase looked down at Sarge.
"I ain't doing it for you. I know they've been through all the houses around here already, and I'm fine with that. Folks left 'em, and they looked for things that may help us out."
Chase looked back to the two boys.
"But going into a place where people live, people who helped us out no less, just ain't acceptable."
Chris came around the house, carrying a wax myrtle limb the size of his thumb. He was using his pocket knife to smooth out anything that was sticking up. Thad leaned over and whispered,
"I think he's done this before."
"Grab that rail,"
Chase said, pointing at the porch rail with a stick. Chase tapped the one in the middle with the stick, causing him to jump.
"Back up," he ordered. "You boys know better than to do what you did."
With that, he started going down the line, giving each two licks with the stick, making three passes. To their credit, none of them cried out, though their knees did buckle once or twice. When he finished, Chase told them to apologize as they rubbed their asses. Chris walked up to Sarge.
"Sorry."
"Sorry for what?"
Sarge asked.
"Sorry for going into your cabin."
The other two didn't need any prompting.
"Linus, I'm sorry for what they done. If you ever catch him messing up again,"
Chase looked at the boys.
"And there better not be a next time."
He looked back at Sarge.
"Feel free to blister their asses."
Sarge looked at them.
"I think they learned their lesson. Don't reckon they'll try it again."
Sarge looked back at Chase.
"I think you and me are cut from the same cloth."
"Looks that way. I appreciate you bringing them here, and not taking it into your own hands."
"Not a problem. We'll keep an eye out for them. You need anything?"
"Nah, we're all right. Unless you can get the lights back on."
"If I could, we wouldn't be having this conversation."
The slightest hint of a smile cracked Chase's face.
"I reckon not."
"We'll be seeing ya,"
Sarge said, as he turned to leave.
"Load up,"
he called out to us.
Chapter 15. Ted was frustrated. While these girls knew the basics of using a handgun, they were horrible shots. Anything in front of the muzzle, from the ground at their feet to the sun above, was as likely to be hit as the target set up 20 yards away. While he had instructed countless people in marksmanship, It had always been soldiers who at least had the basics down.
I like rifles better, Taylor said, as Ted pondered his options.
Me too, but not big ones, not like that, Leanne said, pointing to his M4.
Well, what in the hell do you want to use?
The thought rattled in his mind.
You ladies wait here. I'll be right back.
Leanne looked at Mal.
Where's he going?
He's giving up, Taylor said, causing Leanne to laugh. Remember when Dad tried to teach us to shoot?
Yeah, Mom always shot the ground, Taylor laughed.
Not always, Mel said.
No, just most of the time.
I can shoot, and I'm good at it too,
Little Bit said from her lawn chair. She was particularly upset she wasn't included in the class. I remember him saying once he didn't understand how we could figure out the sights, Leanne said, looking at the pistol on the lawn chair in front of her. How'd he learn to shoot?
He was born with it, Taylor said with a laugh.
Poppy taught him. They hunted a lot when he was little. He spent all his time with a BB gun, Mel said.
I miss Grandma and Poppy.
Do we know where they are? Taylor asked.
We don't. But knowing your Poppy, they're fine.
You think Daddy can do anything? Well, Poppy can do anything with nothing.
Yeah.
Dad said he was in Vietnam, that he flew helicopters and was shot down a bunch, Taylor said.
He didn't fly them, he flew in them and shot the machine gun, Mel corrected.
Wow, really? I want a machine gun, Taylor smiled.
You couldn't shoot a machine gun, Leanne said with a smirk.
Ted's return broke up the chatter. He climbed off the ATV and carried over an armload of black guns, laying them across the arms of the lawn chair.
What's that?
Leanne asked. Ted turned to them, a smile on his face.
Ladies, this is an H&K MP5 submachine gun.
Wide-eyed Taylor and Leanne looked at one another.
Really? A machine gun?
Yes. But right now, we aren't going to use it like one. Pay attention.
Ted went on to explain the operation of the weapon, what the various selector switch settings meant, and how the weapon functioned. All the talk of the gas system went right over their heads, but they got the gist of it. He handed out cleared weapons and empty magazines to each of them, and had them practice inserting the mag and charging the weapon. Numerous magazine drills were run, as well as some basic emergency drills for clearing the weapon.
Are we going to shoot these things or not? Bobby asked.
Ted smiled.
Yes, and you can go first.
After spending a few minutes showing them how to load the mags, he had them load 10 rounds into 3 apiece.
Why don't we just fill it up? Mel asked.
Because I want you guys to practice changing them out as well.
Once everyone had their mags ready, Bobby stepped up to the firing line and shouldered her weapon. The girls covered their ears. Bobby pulled the trigger, and the weapon spit out the bullet. The girls all dropped their hands.
Is it broken?
Taylor asked, as a confused Bobby looked at the H&K.
Did it come out? Bobby asked.
Ted laughed.
Oh yeah, it came out.
Holding up one of the weapons, he pointed to the suppressor screwed on the end.
This is a suppressor. It muffles the report. Though, as you just heard, there's still some there.
Cool, we get silencers, Taylor cried out.
No, they're not silencers. Those only exist in movies. Everyone, remove your hearing protection and listen to the next shot.
Ted turned to Bobby.
If you please.
Bobby fired another round, and this time they all heard the report.
Wow. I really like this. It hardly kicks, and there's almost no sound.
Exactly. Now, let's see if the rest of you guys can shoot these things.
Ted spent the next hour and a half running the girls through drills. All of them were able to hit the target on every shot, not always in the black, but close to it. At the end of the lesson, he was satisfied that they could safely handle the weapons. In fact, they were instinctively making the weapon safe after each shot by keeping the muzzles pointed at the ground. He had only let them fire the weapons in semi-auto up to this point,
and he decided it would be time to let them fire it in the 3-round burst mode. After a brief lecture about the difference between those modes, he had them load 9 rounds in a magazine and step up to the firing line, one at a time. When they each had fired 3 bursts, all the weapons were laid aside.
"See the difference?" Ted asked.
"Yeah, I like that. It's cool," Taylor said. "I prefer to shoot one at a time," Mel said.
"Me too," Bobby concurred.
"What about you?"
Ted asked Leanne.
"It's okay, but I think I like it one at a time too, like Mom."
"What about the other setting, the full auto one? Are we going to do that?" Taylor asked.
Ted looked at her and picked up a magazine, stuffing rounds into it. Once the mag was loaded, Ted picked up one of the weapons. Taylor stepped up, and Ted put his hand up.
"Nope. This is for demonstration purposes only."
Dejected, she stepped back as Ted inserted the magazine and charged the weapon.
"Going hot!"
he shouted as he shouldered it. Gaining a sight picture, he squeezed the trigger, holding it down for all 30 rounds. Brass flew from the weapon as gas and lead spit out the muzzle. Out of rounds, he dropped the mag and made the weapon safe.
"What'd you see?"
"Lots of fun," Taylor said.
"It looked like it was hard for you to control. Harder, anyway," Bobby said.
"Exactly. Full auto is a waste of ammo most of the time. It has its place, though."
He held the weapon up.
"These are personal defense weapons. They are not for offensive actions out here. They are meant for close quarters action. You guys are getting these so you can defend yourselves. We just don't have the time to get you up to speed with the sidearm."
He paused and looked at Taylor.
"Full auto is nothing to play with. If you're somewhere and 3 or 4 people are after you, then rock and roll. But even then, you should use the burst setting, got it?"
They all nodded, satisfied that they understood. Ted smiled and said,
"Now for the real fun. You get to clean your weapon."
Taylor was the only one excited at the prospect of cleaning the weapons. She happily skipped off, leaving the others to chuckle at how Taylor had become the go-to gun girl of the family. Chapter 16. When the shooting stopped and the siren blaring began to wind down, Jess and Mary stood up to survey the area. The bus that had started moving was gone. They watched as the security forces rounded the people up.
"Oh my Lord, look at the bodies!"
Mary cried, her hands over her mouth.
"There's so many of them,"
Jess pointed out toward the crowd. "Look, some of them are still moving.
Why aren't they helping them? They're just standing there."
Jess squinted her eyes and leaned forward.
"Is that a kid?"
"Where?"
Jess pointed again.
"There, between those 2 buses." Both women strained to see.
"It looks like it,"
Mary said, shaking her head. As they were trying to get a better view, a small form sat up, long blonde hair in a mass of tangles.
"Oh my God, it is! It's a little girl, look at her!"
Jess cried out.
"She's got blood all over her!"
Suddenly, both of them were slammed to the ground. Before they could react, voices behind them screamed,
"Get down! Stay down!"
Stunned, all they could do was lie there with their hands up by their heads.
"Please don't shoot us!"
Mary shouted.
"What are you doing out here? Didn't you hear the siren?"
"We did, but we were already outside when the shooting started," Mary shouted.
"On your damn feet!"
The two rolled over to see 2 of the security men standing over them. They lay there, terrified.
"Get up, I said!"
Mary and Jess slowly got to their feet, their hands still over their heads. One of the security agents reached out and snatched their ID badges off.
"Go back to your tent."
"What about our badges?" Jess asked.
"Just take your ass back to your damn tent," the man said.
And when the women didn't move, he shouted,
"Now!"
Mary and Jess quickly headed for the tent, Jess in the lead and Mary pushing her from behind.
Go, go, go,
Mary urged. Making it to the tent, they went to one of the tables and fell on the bench. Fred came running over to them.
What happened? Why are you crying?
They took our ID badges, Mary cried.
Who? Where?
We were outside when the shooting started. The bullets were going past us, so we got on the ground. When the siren stopped, we got up, and were about to come back here, when the security guy showed up and knocked us down. They took our badges, Jess said, covering her face when she finished.
Oh my God, what were they shooting at?
People down at the reception area. I think they tried to steal a bus.
Was anyone hit?
A bunch of people. I think that's what they were mad about, that we saw it, Mary said nervously. Fred looked at their chests.
And they took your badges?
Yeah, Mary said.
What are you going to do? How do you get them back?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, Jess said. As they were talking, Singer entered the tent shouting,
All right, ladies, we are locked down until further notice. No one leaves the tent except to use the latrines, and that will be scheduled. There's a guard outside the door.
She abruptly left the tent. Fred looked at Jess.
Well, at least she didn't catch you without the badge.
Yeah, for now, Mary said with a crinkled brow.
Well, we're stuck here now.
You guys want to play cards? Fred asked, trying to lighten up some of the tension. Jess looked over and let out a long sigh.
Sorry, I'm not really in a card-playing mood right now.
Come on. What else are you going to do around here? Fred asked, gesturing around the tent.
Jess looked around.
I guess you're right. What are we playing?
Hearts and spades? I'll get the cards, Fred said, as she got up from the table.
When Fred was on the hunt for the cards, Mary leaned over.
Jess, I'm worried. Why'd they take our badges? What are they going to do to us?
I don't know, but try not to let it worry you. We were following the rules to get on the ground. We couldn't help about what we saw. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
The worst is what I'm worried about.
Fred returned to the table, and the three of them spent the next 2 hours playing hearts and spades, with the occasional hand of blackjack thrown in for variety. They were in the middle of a game of spades when the tent door opened and Singer stepped in.
Line up, ladies! Bathroom break!
They laid their cards down and headed for the door with the rest of their tent mates. Singer stood in the doorway as the women exited. Jess was following Fred out the door when Singer put her hand into Jess's chest.
Forgetting something?
Jess looked at her, confused.
No. Your badge. Go get it.
I don't have it. Singer crossed her arms.
What do you mean you don't have it?
Looking at the floor, Jess mumbled that security had it.
I'm sorry, I don't speak mealy mouth. Look at me when you're talking to me. What'd you say?
Looking up, Jess said, Security took it from me earlier. Singer rocked back on her heels.
Oh, really? And why'd they do that?
I don't know, they just did.
And let me guess, your friend doesn't have hers either, Singer said, looking at Mary.
Mary looked at the floor.
No, ma'am.
Singer glared at her.
At least you know how to talk to your superiors.
She looked back to Jess with a sneer.
Both of you, come with me,
she said as she turned to leave. Jess and Mary looked at each other. Then Mary asked,
Where are we going?
Singer turned back to her.
Are you going to give me trouble? We can do this the easy way or the hard way.
We need to use the bathroom, Jess said.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Fine, make it quick.
Jess and Mary quickly headed toward the latrines, saying nothing. As soon as they were inside, Mary broke down and began crying. The other women looked over, curious. Fred approached and asked what was going on.
We don't know. We have to go with Singer.
I don't know where they're taking us,
Jess said.
What are they going to do to us?
Mary asked, through her sobs, wiping tears from her face.
You guys haven't done anything wrong. It's not your fault. They were shooting people, Fred said.
Let's hurry up before she comes in here, Jess said, as she went into a stall. Singer was impatiently waiting at the tent, tapping her foot and gesturing for them to follow her. She wound her way through the camp to areas that neither Jess nor Mary had been to before. The camp was a warren of tents and small buildings that looked like shipping containers, only with doors and windows. The lanes between all these structures were simple sand paths that were carefully maintained. The sound and exhaust of large diesel generators filled the air the farther they went. Singer turned off the path into a large building that had a sign reading, "Security," hanging over the door. Jess and Mary followed her through the door, but Singer stopped them and said,
"Wait here and don't move."
"Look at all these computers," Jess whispered. Mary was too anxious to look, staring at the floor.
"How do they have all these? Look at that. They have cameras up somewhere."
Jess was looking at a station with 3 32-inch monitors. A technician sat behind them controlling the cameras. The views on the screen rotated through different shots slowly, the technician occasionally zooming in for a closer look. After what seemed like forever, Singer reappeared and led them to a small office where a haggard-looking man in a black uniform sat behind a dusty desk. Jess saw their badges lying in front of him.
"These are the two,"
Singer said, crossing her arms over her chest. The man looked at them and examined the badges.
"Why are you two here?"
Jess was getting tired of the games. Her patience had been wearing thin by waiting and by the implied accusations.
"I have no idea. Why don't you tell me?"
Mary shot Jess a look. Singer's eyes narrowed.
"Who do you think you're talking to?"
"Again, I have no idea. I wasn't introduced." She felt her anger rise. Singer looked at the man behind the desk.
"I told you they were trouble."
Jess's face contorted into a sneer.
"Trouble? What the hell have we done?
We were coming back from the bathroom when the shooting started. We got on the ground when the bullets started passing over our heads." Jess was starting to tremble from anger. Mary was trying her best to hide behind her.
"And how do you know bullets were passing over your head?" Singer asked.
"Because I have been shot at before. I know what it sounds like." The man behind the desk interrupted them.
"Who took your badges?"
"When the siren stopped, we stood up and two of your goons knocked us down without saying anything. They took them," Jess answered defiantly.
"They were in a restricted area," Singer said.
"What?
We were coming back from the bathroom. Is the fucking bathroom off limits?"
Singer moved toward Jess.
"You need to watch your damn mouth."
Jess couldn't contain herself.
"Fuck you, bitch."
Singer's eyes went wide and she lunged for Jess, grabbing her by the throat. Jess knocked her hat off and grabbed two hands full of hair as they went to the floor. Mary screamed and ran into the corner. The man behind the desk was quickly on his feet and grabbed both women.
"Knock this shit off!"
He struggled for a few seconds to get them separated. And when he finally did, Jess stood glaring at Singer. Singer's red hair hung in strands over her face, sticking out all over. With a huff, she blew the hair out of her eyes.
"I told you these two would stir shit up,"
Singer said, pointing an accusing finger at Jess. The man looked at her.
"You just need to shut the fuck up, Singer. What have they done? That one is on the damn floor."
He paused and pointed at Singer.
"And you attacked her."
"You heard what she called me."
"It's called freedom of speech. Look it up,"
Jess said, as she rubbed her neck.
"You don't have any rights," Singer said, trying unsuccessfully to smooth out her hair.
"Why? Are we prisoners?"
I thought this was a humanitarian camp. You people treat us like convicts. Hell, even convicts have rights.
You're not prisoners. You're here for your safety, the man said. Jess looked at him.
So I can leave the camp, then?
No, you can't. You're under our control, Singer said.
That's enough, Singer, the man said.
Singer glanced over at him, then back to Jess. Jess gave her a snarky smile.
No, you can't leave. We're under martial law, and you are not free to leave, the man said in a calm tone, trying to bring the level down. There's a lot of bad stuff going on out there right now. You're much safer here.
So how long do we have to stay here? What's going to happen next?
This was the first time that Jess had even been able to ask someone questions, and this man was at least willing to talk. Jess was hungry for information.
There has been a setback in our relocation efforts. You will soon be sent to one of the pacified zones, assigned housing, and given a job.
Fuck that! I don't want to be assigned housing or given a job. I want to go take care of myself.
You came here by choice. Now that you're here, you gotta go along with the program, the man said evenly.
We can make things hard on you if you don't cooperate, Singer snapped.
Jess looked at her. Bring it on, bitch.
She needs to go into detention, Singer barked.
I've already told you two to knock it off. I don't want to hear any more of this crap.
The man pointed at Jess. You two, go back to your tent. He tossed their badges to her as he said it.
I'll see you in a little while, Singer said, nodding her head.
Jess looked at her, then at the man. You send her back over there, and we're going to have issues.
You don't have a choice in the matter, Singer barked. Go, get out of here.
The man pointed at the door. Jess and Mary left the office. Singer went to follow them out when the man said,
You wait here.
Singer stopped. Jess looked over her shoulder and smiled at her, giving her the finger as the door shut. Several people in the large office area looked at them as they passed through. Jess handed Mary her badge and clipped hers to her coat as they exited the building.
You okay?
Jess asked Mary, as they started down the path. Mary looked at her.
I'm fine, but girl, you're crazy. I thought they were going to kill you.
That bitch just wishes she could. Jess held out her hand and pulled a long strand of red hair out from between her fingers, holding it up so Mary could see it before letting it drift off on the breeze. I should have pulled out more. Mary laughed and shook her head.
You are nuts.
Jess wrapped an arm around Mary's shoulders, and Mary laid her head over as they walked back to the tent. When they came through the door, Fred jumped up and ran to meet them.
What happened?
She looked at their badges. You got them back? Mary gestured over at Jess and smiled.
Yeah, Miss Crazy here got them back.
Fred smiled.
I should have figured that you were a loose cannon.
She looked around.
Where's Singer?
Talking to her boss. Let's just say she got a couple fewer hairs in her head from our interaction. Fred grabbed Jess by the hand and led her toward one of the tables.
Tell me everything.
Chapter 17. I went to the house to start pulling the power plant out of the shop. Thad said he'd help me while the other guys went to load up for another trip. No one was home, so I figured the girls were still out shooting. I pulled the fridge open and saw a bowl with some leftovers from last night.
You hungry?
I asked Thad.
You know it.
I set the bowl on the table with a couple of forks.
Not too bad cold, I said.
No, pretty good.
Chewing, I said. Found another body.
Where?
The house I got the trailer from. He put a bullet in his head. I found a bottle of insulin on the table next to him. Guess he didn't want to suffer a slow death. Thad thought about it for a moment.
I read somewhere how they treated diabetics before there was insulin. They had to eat a very low-calorie diet, almost like a starvation diet.
I'm sure he was probably already on that at this point. Thad looked at the nearly empty bowl.
Yeah, probably so.
After Thad finished eating, I had to completely disconnect the power, as we had to disassemble the battery bank and move the inverter into the trailer. It was a good thing that Thad was a big guy. Those batteries were heavy. We were inside the trailer reconnecting the cables between the batteries when Mel came out.
Hey, the power's out!
I looked at her, and then back at the batteries in the trailer, then at Thad.
Huh? I wonder why.
Thad laughed.
What are you doing? Why'd you take it all apart?
I'm setting it all up in here, so that if we had to move real quick, we could take it with us. Before Mel could comment, the girls came bouncing out the back door. Taylor had a huge smile on her face.
Where'd you get that?
I asked her, pointing to the H&K slung over her shoulder. She looked at it and smiled.
Pretty cool, huh? Ted gave them to us.
I looked at Mel.
Us?
Yeah, we all have one. He was having a hard time getting everyone, as he put it, proficient with a pistol, so we got these out. She looked back at the girls. We're all pretty good with them, too. Taylor swiveled the weapon around so she could hold it up.
It's even got full auto.
Mel quickly looked at her.
Which you're not going to use.
Yeah, I know. Just showing Dad.
That's some fine hardware there, Thad said.
Taylor beamed. She was so happy she couldn't stand still. For now, go put it in the house. I looked at Mel. Where are the other ones? Hanging on the hooks by the front door. Unloaded, I hope.
Of course, I'm not stupid.
Looking at Taylor, I said, go put yours there too. You don't need to carry that thing around the house.
Why?
You carry yours everywhere. So does he, she said, pointing to the Glock on Thad's hip. The statement really pissed me off, and I almost flew off the handle. Taylor, I agreed that you guys could be armed for self-defense. There's nothing to defend yourself from around here, because me and Thad are armed. If we go anywhere, then you guys will be armed. For now, they stay in the house. She stood there looking like she was going to protest.
Now, I said, in my sternest father or else tone.
Reluctantly, she went inside. I told Mel the power would be back on soon, and she and Leanne headed for the house as well, leaving Little Bit with us.
Can I help?
She asked.
Can you finish this, Thad? I want to go pull the wire out of the shop, so we can reroute it into here.
He nodded and went back to connecting the batteries. I looked over at Little Bit and smiled.
Come on. You can help me.
There were two sets of cables into the shop. One was from the solar panels, the other from the feed that went to the breaker box. My connection to the house was not exactly up to code. I brought the line in from the inverter and connected it to a two-pole breaker in the panel. When the power went out, the process was to turn off the main breaker coming from the meter and turn this one on so it wasn't feeding the grid. All of the wire was in conduit buried in the ground, which meant the trailer would have to sit beside the shop where all the wires entered. Inside, I let Little Bit cut cable ties and pull wires loose. Then, we went outside, and she used a screwdriver to put covers in the boxes so we could pull the wire out. Of course, with her help, this all took longer than if I had done it alone. But it was a lot more fun. Once the wire was out of the building, it only took a couple of holes being drilled into the trailer, and the wire was in. The wire outside was wrapped in rubber electrical tape, and that was in turn covered with vinyl tape to protect it. After unhooking the trailer, I turned the power back on and went in the house to check it. Everything was up and running again, much to the relief of the girls. Heading for the door, I told Mel I was going to go over to Reggie's house. By that point in the day, the trailer should have been loaded. I wanted to hook it up for tomorrow's trip to the cabins. Thad was waiting in the truck when I got back, and we headed out. We found Sarge and Ted sitting in Sarge's buggy at the intersection of Reggie's Road.
Stopping, we got out to find Doc, Danny, and Reggie walking up from his house. We gathered around the front of the truck and shot the shit for a bit about the next load.
You get that power plant loaded into the trailer?
Yeah, we got it. Glad he was here to help. I nodded toward Thad.
What about the panels? How long to get them loaded?
Just a couple of minutes. They have some wing nuts and plugs, and they come right down. I looked around at everyone. How come no one is at the barricade?
We were just getting ready to figure out who was going.
You want to? Ted asked.
Don't matter to me. I can. Who's coming with me?
I'll go, Danny said. Reggie stretched his arms over his head, arching his back.
Good, 'cause I didn't.
He was cut off by a loud crack and crumpled to the ground. Ted, Doc, and Sarge were immediately on the ground. Danny, Thad, and me a second behind them, a little slower than the guys that had been in combat.
Did anyone hear the shot? Sarge called out.
No, just the round,
Ted replied as he looked around, his M4 at his shoulder.
Shit! Reggie's hit!
Doc shouted as he crawled over to him.
Where'd he get hit? Sarge asked.
Reggie was lying face down in the road, a gurgling sound coming from him. Doc rolled him over to reveal a large exit wound in his chest.
In the back! Someone get my bag out of the buggy!
I got to my knees to crawl over.
Stay down, damn it!
Sarge shouted. Crawling to the buggy, I reached in and fumbled around for the pack. Doc looked up.
It's in the back seat. The shot came from down there somewhere, Sarge shouted, pointing down the road toward the barricade.
I managed to drag Doc's bag out and back to him. What I saw was horrible. A hole the size of a tennis ball in the center of Reggie's chest, pooled with blood. Reggie's eyes were open and he was looking up, as if beyond us. Blood trickled from his mouth.
Ted, can you see anything out there? Anywhere the shot could have come from?
Sarge shouted.
Thad, come over here and help us move him,
Doc shouted. Thad crawled over.
Oh, shit! Come on, grab his shoulders. Morgan, help him. Let's move.
I didn't see shit. He's gotta be way out there, Ted shouted back.
The three of us quickly moved Reggie down the road, 20 yards or so. Doc was stuffing a large dressing of some kind into the wound with one hand as we moved.
Hang on, Reggie, hang on!
Setting him down, Doc told us to roll him on his side. When we did, blood poured from his mouth.
Shit!
Doc screamed.
Morgan, check for a pulse!
Doc was furiously trying to stop the bleeding, though even I could tell that if he did manage to stop it, there was no way in hell we could keep him alive. The amount of blood loss was massive. He needed a transfusion now.
I can't find one, I said, checking both sides of his neck. Check his femoral artery, inside his thigh.
Nothing. There's nothing there.
Son of a bitch, Doc shouted.
What's the word, Doc?
Sarge called out. Doc looked over at him and shook his head.
Well, shit.
Sarge was shaking his head.
Teddy, we need to find that sumbitch. And fucking kill him, Ted shouted back. Go to the house and get my M1A. We're going to find his ass.
How are you going to do that? Danny asked. Sarge looked at him, then at his buggy.
Morgan, stay low. But get in that truck and block the road. Do it fast and get out.
He paused.
Fast, understand?
I nodded and darted to the passenger side and climbed in. Thankfully, it had a bench seat in the front, and so I crawled over to the driver's side. Lying across the front seat, raising my head just enough to see, I started it and threw it in reverse, backing it out in a wide arc in the road. I quickly climbed out of the driver's side and ran for the side of the road. Another crack and the two rear windows on either side of the truck spiderwebbed.
Bastard still out there, Ted shouted. Morgan, how can we get up to the end of the road without this sumbitch seeing us?
Sarge asked.
I know a way. Perfect.
He crawled over to the buggy and pulled a bag out, handing Danny a small handheld.
You and Thad stay here and give him something to see.
He looked over at me.
Give me your jacket.
I didn't know what he was up to, but I did as he asked, tossing it over to him. Sarge zipped it up and started looking around.
I need something to stuff in this thing.
There's a roll of plastic in the trailer. I'll go get it, Danny said, taking off in a sprint.
Bring a broom, too, Sarge shouted.
What the hell are you doing? Ted asked.
We're going to make a dummy and put it in the seat of that buggy. Danny can lie on the floor and drive it. He'll be behind the armor, so he can't be hit. He's going to drive it straight down the road here, and then we'll be in position to see the next shot, hopefully.
You're going to do what?
Thad asked incredulously.
Oh, Danny's going to love that.
When Danny got back, Sarge and Ted spent a few minutes assembling the dummy. The jacket was stuffed with plastic, the broom handle running up it. Sarge used a green triangular bandage to make a scarf around the face, and a Kevlar helmet for a head.
Give me your shades, Sarge said to Ted, holding his hand out.
What? Why?
We need some eyes in this thing. Now give them here.
Very reluctantly, he handed them over. Sarge pushed them on the head, and the two of them set the decoy in the driver's seat, taping the sleeves to the steering wheel with duct tape. Sarge gave Danny the rundown of what he wanted him to do.
Are you fucking nuts? Danny asked, shaking his head.
You'll be behind the armor. As long as you keep your head down, you'll be fine. We gotta find this guy, or he'll pick us off one by one.
I think it's a shitty idea.
That's fine. You can think that. Now get your ass in there, Sarge said, pointing to the buggy.
Danny climbed in, trying to squeeze himself onto the floor. Sarge told Thad to wait for him to call. He wanted him to go out behind the truck and move around some, not to stand still, but to move, then run off the road. He needed to keep the guy busy. Thad nodded, and Sarge looked at me to lead the way. We passed Doc, who was still sitting beside Reggie. Sarge looked at him.
You all right?
Yeah.
There was nothing you could do with a wound like that. Get it together. We need you.
Go on. I'll be all right.
Doc, if we get a line in this SOB and start shooting, tell Danny to swing back around and pick you and Thad up. We may need you guys to maneuver on his position.
Roger that,
Doc said, as he started to stand, pausing to wipe the blood from his hands on Reggie's pants.
Teddy, where's that 60-millimeter tube? Sarge asked.
At the house. Want it?
Yeah, go get it. How many rounds did we get for it?
20. All high-explosive HE rounds.
Bring 5 of them.
Ted ran off toward Reggie's place while we waited. Sarge pulled the buggy's saw off its mount, draping belts of ammo over his shoulder. After a few minutes, Ted was back with a tube about 3.5 feet long and had a plate on one end with a handle. He handed me the tube and slung a heavy-looking pack over his shoulder.
Is this a mortar? I asked, looking at it.
Yep. If we find that bastard, Teddy will shove a round up his ass,
Sarge grinned.
Lead the way.
We took off through the backyards of houses in the neighborhood, scaling multiple fences. When we came to my yard, the girls were outside throwing a frisbee that Meathead was eagerly trying to catch.
Get inside and stay there, I shouted, as I cleared the fence.
Little Bit took off at a run for the house.
What's going on? Taylor asked.
There's a sniper out here somewhere. Get in the house.
Really? I didn't hear anything.
We were running past her and Leanne, but they were just standing there, dumbstruck.
Move your asses! In the house! Now!
Sarge barked. That got them in gear. We used a hole in the fence to get into Don's yard, knowing the next property over would be the best one to use to take cover. That one had a screen of cedars planted along the road that would provide great concealment. We stopped at the side of the house, Sarge peering around the corner.
Where do you think he is? Ted asked.
Can't see shit from here.
We need to get to them trees, Sarge said, pointing at the cedars. He led the way as we moved in a crouch toward the tree line. Just short of them, we dropped onto our bellies and crawled under them.
We need to find a place to set this tube up, Ted said.
Let's see if we can find him first, Sarge said, pulling his binos out of his pack. I pulled mine out of my vest and started to look around.
What the hell am I looking for? I asked.
If he's any good, it'll be hard to spot his hide, Ted said.
He was looking through the ACOG on his rifle.
Let's hope he isn't any good, Sarge said.
The field across the road was bare except for the house. I honed in on all the usual places, windows, doors, and the shed off to the side, but everything looked normal.
I don't see shit, I said. Just keep looking. He's out there somewhere, Sarge said.
Ted called out a couple of likely places, and we all watched them, looking for any sign of movement. After a few minutes, something caught my eye.
Hey, look at the gable on the house.
See that attic vent up there? It was one of those decorative louvered-style vents mounted on the end of the gable.
Yeah, I see it. Got two slots missing from it, Sarge said.
They weren't missing the other day, when Danny and I were looking out from the roadblock.
You sure?
Positive. There's nothing else out there to look at. I practically memorized the house.
Then that has to be his spot, Sarge said, pulling out the little handheld radio. Danny, start down the road.
He dropped the radio. Everyone, keep your eyes on that hole.
He's headed out, Doc called back.
Sarge didn't respond. In the distance, we could hear the buggy as it started down the road. I was watching the slot when Sarge said,
There, did you see it?
At almost the same instant, Doc called on the radio.
A round just bounced off the armor. Must have scared him. He almost went off the road.
Doc paused.
More incoming.
I didn't see shit.
What'd you see?
I asked. Sarge picked up the radio.
Danny, drive it off the road and let it stop. Stay down.
He's in the ditch. You got him? Doc asked.
Yeah, we got him. Just sit tight.
Sarge crawled back out from under the trees.
Ted, what do you make the range?
170 meters.
Good. Close to what I had. Come out here. Let's find a place to set this tube up. Morg, you keep an eye on that hole, but watch the whole house in case they try to run.
Roger that. Ted and Sarge moved off, and I could hear them talking, trying to find a place where they could see the house but not be seen. After a few minutes, Sarge came crawling back in. From behind me, I heard a metallic sliding sound with a tapping thunk.
All right. In a minute, we're going to open up on that gable. Don't try to shoot through that hole. I want you to shoot low and to the left of it. You gotta think about where his body is going to be able to shoot out of there. It has to be low and to the left. Got it?
I nodded. Yeah, low and left. Sarge picked up the radio.
Doc, soon as we open up, you and Thad get to Danny and head for that house. Shooter is in the attic, behind that gable vent up there.
Roger, waiting on you. Sarge pulled the saw up to his shoulder and looked over at me.
Low and left.
I nodded and pulled my rifle to my shoulder, lining my sights up at the gable. The sound when Sarge pulled the trigger on the saw was deafening. It made me jump, but he never let up, and when I regained my composure, I started to fire. With all the racket the saw was making, I never heard Ted's shot, but I saw it as a shell landed just short of the house.
Add 10!
Sarge shouted, pausing the saw, then immediately went back to work on the end of the house. I was shooting steadily at the gable, which was crumbling before my eyes. A moment later, the roof of the house erupted in an explosion. The blast was massive, and I stopped shooting.
We got a runner!
Doc screamed into the radio. Looking down the road, I saw the buggy come off our street and take off to the right, the crackle of gunfire coming from it.
Get him! Get his ass!
Sarge screamed into the radio.
Put another round into it, Teddy!
Sarge shouted, and resumed firing at what was rapidly becoming a pile of rubble. A few seconds later, there was another thunderous explosion in the house, as the wall facing us collapsed and started to burn. Sarge ceased firing and climbed out from under the trees.
Come on, let's go check it out.
I got up, and Ted stepped through the trees. Together, we crossed the road, weapons at the ready, covering each other while we hopped the fence. We could still hear shooting coming from down the road. When we got to the house, the damage was impressive. What wasn't blasted apart had shrapnel damage. It looked like a tornado had hit the place. A large chunk of the roof lay upside down in the yard with a 2x4 stuck through it.
Let's see if we can find a body, Sarge said.
With the flames growing, we moved into the mangled end of the house, flipping over plywood and pieces of drywall.
Look here, Ted said,
picking up the rifle, its barrel bent and half of the scope missing, with a badly dented suppressor mounted on it.
There must be two of them, but we got one, Sarge said, looking over.
He was holding a bloody arm up by the hand. It still had part of the black BDU sleeve on it.
See if we can find any intel, Morg. Go look in the garage.
You mean what's left of it? Sarge looked at me and tossed the arm.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Now go!
While the garage was heavily damaged, the drop-down attic access ladder was still down. Against one wall were a radio and pack, with a couple of sleeping mats. Empty MRE packages littered the floor. It was obvious someone had been here for a couple of days at least. Smoke drifted into the garage, and through the sound of the flames, I could hear something, like someone talking. The sound was coming from a handset laying on the ground.
Delta 1-1, what's your situation?
There was a pause.
Delta 1-1, Delta 1-1.
They'd either gotten a call out, or they were part of a larger operation. Snatching up the radio, I ran around the house.
Here, I said, as I tossed the bag to Sarge. Someone's calling.
He passed it off to Ted to go through, as he talked into his radio.
Good. Check his pockets and bring back anything interesting.
They get him? I asked.
Yeah, they got him. Hoped they'd take him alive, but it didn't work out that way.
He looked at the radio I found.
What's going on there?
Dunno. Sounds like someone's trying to call these guys. Ted looked up, the handset to his ear.
We got problems. There's gotta be more of them.
Sarge knelt down beside him, and Ted handed over the handset. He listened for a moment before jumping up and looking around.
We gotta move! They're going to try and hit us!
Danny came driving up with the guys. Doc hopped out before it even stopped.
He didn't have anything important on him, just a map of the area.
He handed the map to Sarge. Who got him? I asked Thad and Danny as they got out. Thad shrugged.
All of us, I reckon.
Yeah, he was pretty shot up, Danny added, then looked at the house. Anyone in there?
Pieces, parts.
Damn, Thad said.
All we found was an arm. There's probably more, but it was enough, I said.
Looking at Danny, I asked, was that guy in uniform?
Yeah, big old DHS patch on his sleeve.
Why in the hell are they trying to kill us?
Probably because we left that pile of guys on the road, Thad said.
We're going to have to get the hell out of here now, Danny said.
Hey! Sarge shouted. This ain't over. We need to get back home. The shit's about to hit the damn fan around here.
Where are they coming from? I asked.
Don't know, but we need to be ready for them. If it were me, I'd come in the back door.
We made it down to the barricade just as Mike and Jeff came flying down 19.
What the hell's going on? Mike asked as he shut off the buggy.
Sniper got Reggie, and more are coming. We need to get ready for them. Mike, take a saw, and you, Thad, and Danny, go back to Danny's place. Doc, Ted, and me will position ourselves at the intersection with Reggie's place. Morg,
You and Jeff take the front door. Wherever they show up, we'll act as a reaction force to counter them.
We piled into the buggy. Ted was already running to where he left the tube. As Danny raced toward the neighborhood, Sarge asked,
Jeff, you got something other than that peasant rifle?
No, just my Glocks.
I've got an AK that I can give him.
Take us to my place, I said, as we passed through the barricade.
Danny took off down the road, dropping Sarge and Doc off at the intersection. Thad jumped out as well.
Go ahead, I'll meet you at your place.
Danny nodded and took off in a cloud of dust.
Where are you going, Thad?
Sarge called as Thad ran off.
To get my rifle. This scattergun ain't gonna cut it if they show up.
Grab a radio, too,
Sarge shouted as Thad ran off.
Go get as many rounds for that tube as you can carry,
Sarge told Doc, who nodded and trotted off toward Reggie's house. Ted ran up, huffing and puffing.
Shit, this thing is heavy when you're running with it. Let's get some ranges real quick,
Sarge said, as he stepped out into the road, binos in hand. Jeff and I ran to my house. Mel was on the porch, with her H&K.
What's going on? She cried.
We think they're about to hit us here. Where are the girls?
In the house. What are we going to do?
I went to the safe and pulled the AK out, along with all the mags and ammo I had for it. Mel came into the bedroom.
What do we do?
I could see the fear in her eyes.
I don't know. I don't know. Let me think, I said, as I headed for the living room.
Here, Jeff. I'll be down there in a minute. Let me get everyone straightened out.
No problem. Just hurry, he said, as he hit the door.
The house wouldn't provide them any cover. I knew that. Bullets would shred this place. I needed to think of somewhere for them to go. My head was spinning. Mel was talking. The older girls were asking questions. Little Bit was crying. It was too much.
Okay, guys. Calm down and listen up. We don't know what's happening. We just think something is about to, and you guys need to be somewhere safe.
Where are you going? You aren't coming with us? Leanne asked.
If they show up, I'll have to help fight them.
We can help too, Taylor said.
I looked at her and took her hand. Kiddo, I know you want to help, but believe me, this isn't anything you want a part of. The biggest help you can do is to stay safe with your sisters.
Why can't we stay here? Mel asked.
Because they know where our house is and could show up here. I want you guys outside somewhere where you won't